The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Today, we chat about the remarkable profusion of art in the Downtown Eastside. Today's chat is with Savannah Walling. Savannah is the Associate Artistic Director of the Heart of the City Festival. This festival wrapped up last week after over 100 cultural and artistic events, online and outdoors. And this interview was rewarding and in some ways challenging for me. As a journalist who mostly covers urban issues, I don't often talk about arts or culture. But as I watched a couple of events at the festival and spoke with Savannah, I'm starting to better understand how art isn't something I just do in the evenings doodling in my sketchbook, but it really helps us make sense of the issues we deal with, the complexity of the neighborhood, and of our lives in general. Here's Savannah. Savannah Walling, what a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
Savannah, it's been long and such an involved festival, and with over 100 events showcasing arts in the neighborhood, that's a lot. Can you tell me a little more about how the festival went and how it went for you?
Well, this year's festival was quite a different festival for us, given the pandemic that arrived in March and all the shifts that meant in the territory of what we could do. And so it meant shifting from a primarily live-based festival and extremely community engaged in the community to one that was had a large component of online with a little bit of intimate performances in venues or streets or parks. So that was a very different kind of experience. And it also meant a huge learning curve for us to gather the skills to be able to begin to move online. But we're really pleased and deeply touched by the number of artists and partners who came forward, who really, really wanted to share their voices and their creative activities, and who were willing to kind of join in and looking at innovative or different kinds of approaches to sharing, you know, sharing their artistic contributions. So it was a stressful journey and one of those imperfect miracles that we find come our way. And we are in such gratitude to the beauty and power of what people were bringing and sharing. So that's a little bit about my experience.
Savannah, I'd love to hear a little bit about what touched you during this festival. I'm thinking about all the many folks who probably didn't get into as many events as they would like, or maybe folks who are just hearing about the festival for the first time on our show. And I'd love to give them a sense of what happened and how it touched you personally.
Well, there were many, as I said, many events that I attended and was part of, and also our company, Vancouver Moving Theater, was involved in partnerships producing four of the events that were happening at the festival as well. Certainly, some of the events that made a big impression on me included the Jennifer Reeds project with the reading of the Diary of Anne Frank from an Indigenous perspective and looking at the different ways of sharing narrative about what has taken place and who's included and who's not included. And another project that meant a lot to me and was very exciting to attend was In the Beginning, which was a cultural sharing taking place at the Fire Hall Arts Center. And there were five nights and in which there were cultural sharings, each night from Indigenous people that and the kind of stories and histories and things that we need to know about and hear about. So one of the events had Indigenous artists who've come here from across the mountains sharing from their experiences. Another one had artists and cultural speakers who had come across the waters, including one, Woody Morrison, who was raised as an oral historian since he was about the age of three. And there were also events with people coming from the Musqueam and the Squamish and the Tsleil-Waututh reserves. And they were coming from different perspectives as artists or as cultural keepers of the land, or as be involved in the canoe journeys and the canoe revivals, etc. Another project was the Grounds for Goodness, which I found very exciting. It was a residency, most of it virtual, but not all of it. And it was looking at what are some of the ways and the reasons for people who do a kind action for another person or another group of people. And there were stories that were coming forward, and there was art that has been created, music concerts that have been created from these journeys that was being shared. And we also had worked with Rianne Svelnis, who did some story gathering stations around the neighborhood. And it was encouraging people to share their stories. And these are now in part of a virtual online gallery, but there's also a gallery at the Interurban Culture Saves Lives, where people can go and see what people were sharing. Another very exciting event for me, very powerful, was the Honoring Downtown Eastside Warrior Ceremony. And this took place at Crab Park in the open air. It was freezing cold, but about a small group of people came out and stayed. And as one of the people said, the most meaningful ceremonies happen with the winter wind blowing the medicine. But it was a very beautiful and powerful event that was honoring Don Larson, involved in the creation and sustaining of Crab Park, of Wendy Peterson, who's been so involved in supporting housing and SRO. And an SRO advocate, Erica Grant, whose family has been helping to provide thousands of meals for the community, John Wolf Sam, and the Love Medicine Drum Group, and the cultural work that they've been doing, Veronica Butler, who's been the elder managing the sacred fire at the Tent City in Strathcona Park. Just a really powerful, powerful event that was an honor to be part of it. Another event I really enjoyed was Sid Chow Tan, and he was sharing, had an online event called My Art is Activism, and he was sharing about a lot of the really exciting activism and advocacy that's been happening over the years in the Chinese Canadian community. So I just found many of the events quite thrilling to be part of. I also enjoyed the Pulling Together Canoes and listening to the conversations that were coming out of it. And I'd had the honor of attending one of the pulling canoe journeys in the summer before. And I just found, again, this story of 20 years of collaborations between First Nations communities and working with police and social service agencies to build healthier relationships. And to do it through involving youth and also through connecting with communities up and down the coast. And it's been, these are very powerful, powerful gatherings. And to witness a context where everybody involved is working in, doing their best to work in a good way and to pull together as one group is truly a rare experience in this fragmented age that we live in, and very, very inspiring.
And that's a lot of so many events, Bennon. I know you could just go on.
It could. I'll just mention the Heartbeat, which was a collaboration between Indigenous Irish artists exchanging their culture. Again, extremely exciting and an honor to witness. But it's true, as you say, it could go on and on.
Maybe let's take a step back, and I just want to ask you a little bit for your thoughts on this. So I'm, as a journalist, I cover, for a morning news program, I cover a lot of the, what we call the hard news, the hard facts, the nonfiction narrative. And I'm curious about your thoughts on the role that art has to play in untangling some of the very large social issues that our neighborhood faces, say reconciliation.
Well, for myself, art has been a way to pose the big questions about life and human beings. that are part of it. And it's also been a way of keeping sane and keeping grounded. It's been a way of finding out about the community that I live in and that I'm part of. It's been a way of finding out about the reason why historical events have happened in the way that they have. And it's been a way to be part of projects in which people come together from very different backgrounds to work together on a common purpose. And in the process of learning to have respect and to gain understanding of the stories that each are carrying. So these are some of my thoughts about that.
I know that I remember watching the film screening of the Pulling Together Canoe Project, put together by the Pulling Together Canoe Society. And I remember being, I think I sort of remember being, I think, moved. I almost wanted to cry during the film screening. There's just so much going on there. Like, you're talking about the relationship between First Nations and some our public service agencies about there were First Nations youth on the canoe with VPD officers, mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. naval officers and corrections officers. And I thought, I think it gave me a little bit of a little bit more of an understanding of reconciliation and how hard it is and how necessary it is, but also just a different way of looking at it, I suppose, that isn't necessarily doom and gloom, but has a lightness to it.
And reconciliation is deeply entwined with repair and redress of harms that have been done in the past, and learning how to move in a way to help repair some of the harms, and how do you work together to build relationships that can sustain and nourish the children to come and the emerging generations to come.
Savannah, I'm Chinese by cultural background, and I was pretty interested. So one of the events caught my eye was the Yellow Peril film screening. And I just want to play a portion of the beginning of the film, and I'd love to discuss it a little bit with you.
Diaspora babies. We are born of pregnant pauses, spilled from unwanted wombs, squalling invisible ink poems written in the margins of a map of a place called No Homeland.
The subject launches into a narrative, a written poem, the subject of the film is dressed in a drag costume and just playing out against the vastness of the coastal wilderness. And I think it's striking to me in a lot of ways, because I looked at it and I thought, you know, as a person of Chinese origin, we don't talk about gayness very often in the community. And we certainly don't talk about drag in the queer community. And then to combine that with sort of the coastal wilderness was really striking to me. And I guess what do I want to put out here? I guess I want to put out how much it struck me as a person watching this, and like really understanding in a way, gaining a new understanding in a way that no other non-art form could give me that realization. And I just wanted to put that out there to you and just hear you that, whether that's a common, that's something common you hear.
No, I think that's a bit different than I've heard. I mean, it's related to, but people are each coming with such different sets of lenses and experiences for which they come to the story. For myself, I didn't get to see it this time because I was at another festival event, but I had seen The Yellow Peril about a year ago, and I just felt it was such an exciting piece of work that I strongly advocated to bring it to the festival this year. And that's partly coming from a really long-standing interest I've had in Asian art forms and in various collaborations that we've been involved in over the years, and also partly my experience coming as an immigrant to Canada. And you know, all the questions of kind of identity, and when you're coming from ancestors that have been kind of constantly on the move and all that. So it was like it was a poetic reflection that I found. It was mirroring aspects of my lived experience at the same time as opening doors into the world of a gay drag artist all at the same time.
I was very grateful to you and the festival production team and to all the artists to sort of give me a window into worlds that I've never gained access to. You know, I don't know how at what other point I would have learned that there was an Asian drag scene in Vancouver.
That's right. And I had first seen Made in China performing at the Chinese Gardens when Paul Wong had created a really extraordinary event. And then I'd had the chance to find out about the Yellow Peril, and kind of one relationship or connection led into another. And then I was also familiar with David Ng and really inspired by the work of the artist who created this video too. And for myself, yes, each of the festival events are like a window of understanding that is opening up, you know, and into oral history, into context, into the reasons why and how things have unfolded.
I was thinking, Savannah, as I reflected on the festival, maybe this is why the festival is so powerful. Maybe just for me, I'm sure everyone has their reasons, but it seems that every event of the festival sort of gave me the possibility of understanding a different world that I may not be part of, or maybe I'm part of, but didn't know I was part of.
I think that is one of the goals of the festival. You know, we're partly wanting to counter some of the stereotypical assumptions about the neighborhood. And at the same time, we're wanting to honor and bring forward the stories and the cultures that go into the making of it, because it is a community that we really value and a community that has so much to share and from whom I've been learning for so many years.
In my interview with Terry, in my chat with Terry last week, we talked about the number of writers in the neighborhood, and I was blown away by that too, because before really sort of getting to know the festival, I didn't realize there was such a strong contingent of writers in the neighborhood. And maybe going off of that, Savannah, I'd love your thoughts on maybe writers in the neighborhood or other artists in the neighborhood that you really admire that you could share with us today.
Well, certainly the festival itself is a way of bringing forward the artists that inspire me and that inspire the people that I'm working with. One of the artists that I've been learning about more about this year has been Larissa Healy. I have a great admiration and respect for what she's doing, and the more that I've learned about her, the more I've gained an understanding of the breadth of her practice. She was involved in grass dancing as part of the downtown, the Honoring Downtown Eastside Warriors performance. She shared some dancing as well as part of the Downtown Eastside Front and Center. But she is a graffiti painter and an artist who's painted many of the murals in our neighborhood and alleys and streets. And she's also a facilitator and a teacher. And her work has been seen in the Bill Reid Gallery, the National Gallery of Canada, as well, as I said, in some of the alleys of our streets. And she has been sharing her culture in and of healing through the powwow dancing that she is doing, through the grass dancing that she is bringing and sharing at different cultural events. And she's also a real facilitator and teacher who's been dedicating her life to empowering youth and all that. So she's an example of an artist of whom I've been aware of before this year, but this year I really began to hear about more aspects of her practice and, you know, just find it really exciting. And there's some of the artists that we've worked with, we've seen them, their practice unfold over the years as they've expanded their range of what they're doing, like Priscilla Tate, for example, or Stephen Litton, artists from the community. There are cultural treasures that we've followed for many years, like Takeo Yamashiro, Shakuhachi Master, and following the taiko drummers and the taiko drumming form unfolding here in the neighborhood. And then seeing the kinds of efforts that have gone into, for example, carving and making possible the survivor's totem pole, and seeing this artistry and creation that's unfolding through years of effort by many, many people to make it happen.
I want to ask you about resources in the neighborhood for artists, and maybe that will keep be the last question of our conversation today. For what, where, for folks who are in the neighborhood who are just getting started, you know, who are just kind of wanting to explore art, and then they're, and say for folks who are maybe 3-5 years into their practice, or maybe 20 years into their practice, do you have a sense of where folks can go to explore with other people and get inspired and do their craft?
Some of the places people have been going to are the cultural and community centers of the neighborhood. And there are some of the programs that have slowly been starting to open up again. But there are a number of the cultural centers that have maintained schools or dance schools or language centers, martial arts training, musical training. There are drum groups such as the folks, the Love Medicine and John Sam, and people working at the A Culture Saves Lives group. There are many of the healing programs, or I guess I'm trying to find the language for it. Many of the programs that are put on by different agencies in the neighborhood, they include art programming in recognition of the really valuable place that that fulfills. There's also the Downtown Eastside Small Arts Grants. And these are through the Carnegie Community Center and the Vancouver Foundation, and they provide resources for people to experiment and put on with their art and to get some additional capacity building, et cetera, as part of it. The festival itself offers many doorways from student art to emerging artists, you know, to professional artists and cultural treasures within it, and so that there are different groups that will work over the year to bring forward something that they want to contribute. And then there are groups like the Watari Family Services, who put on a very beautiful a Day of the Dead display this year, working with the traditional Hispanic and Mecups, create Day of the Dead altars in their homes, and then taking photographs that they could bring and to the contribute to the exhibit on the fence at Oppenheimer Park. So this was a kind of another avenue for people to access art making. And then, of course, there's the Gallery Gachet, among other organizations. So there are many, many different avenues, and we could always use more and use more support for them.
Hey, I didn't know that about Watari, which some folks, Watari and I have chatted for on other topics, but I didn't know about their art exhibits as well.
Yeah, they've been doing a lot of exciting art activity over the years, and ordinarily they would be doing at the festival a live event that would be a kind of cultural sharing for the Day of the Dead, but this year they adapted to a different kind of environment and created an exhibit at the corner of Oppenheimer Park.
Savannah, thank you so much for your time today. I think you've inspired me to reopen my sketchbook, and I look forward to checking out more art in the neighborhood.
Great. That I think that's one of the most exciting results for us to see, is that personal inspiration and that desire to connect and build relationships and explore.
Savannah, thank you so much. You take care.
All right, and yourself.
And that was Savannah Walling. Savannah is the Associate Artistic Director of the Heart of the City Festival. And you can find many archived videos of the events at heartofthecityfestival.com. And check them out. I recommend it. That's it for today. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO, with your super local morning news show here on Vancouver Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Tan Macy, and as always, please tell us what you think of the show. We're curious. I'm at Macy at coopradio.org. That's M-E-I-X-I at coopradio.org.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.